Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
Welcome, and thank you for joining us today. This is an hour devoted to learning something more, not just about the world of shoes and ships and sealing wax, but about how, what, and why we think and believe as we do. An hour for the open-minded, willing to challenge some of those old ideas and beliefs behind what we think we know, who we are, and who we might just become. I'm Eldon Taylor, and this is Provocative Enlightenment. All right, our chat room is open, and my partner Ravinder awaits you there now. She has a pretty smile on her face. You can log on by going to eldontaylor.com/chat. So, Ravinder, say hello to the folks and let us all know about your chat room today.
Well, hello, everyone, and it's your shoes and ships and sealing wax that always makes me smile. I just like that expression. What can I say? Of course, the chat room is open. That is eldontaylor.com/chat. Do come in and join us. Tell us your thoughts on the show, or if you have any questions or anything, there's always someone there who will have a really intelligent answer for you. So come join us. That's eldontaylor.com/chat.
All right. Now, every week I read some of your letters as our way of paying respect to the very important role you play in making this show successful. Last week, our show was all about the power of belief and the official launch of the new paperback release of my book, I Believe, When What You Believe Matters. Kimberly wrote, I loved your monologue today. Very well put. I love your show, and I admire the way you look in different directions so that all may see and have their opinions. Blessings to you and Ravinder for causing us all to think about what is in ourselves. Georgina wrote, I believe in Eldon Taylor's I Believe. Reading this single book, I had more aha moments than a whole library of personal development and spiritual books I have read. I recommend it as a must-read for everyone. Thank you, Eldon, once again. Nadja wrote, I Believe has been instrumental in my work as a wellness coach and my own perspective on health. Thank you so very much for sharing your wisdom. Charisse wrote, love this show. Good brain food. Rosanna wrote, Eldon rocks. He is the best of the best. Well, now, I like that one. Thank you, Rosanna. You're grinning. You're laughing.
I like that, too. You do rock. It's about time people appreciated you.
I see.
You should get more of those things.
Especially
you are
by
fabulous.
You.
Huh?
Especially by you. Dina wrote, I love your show. I listen to Hay House at work when I can. Now, as many of you know, I joined George Nuri on Coast to Coast a week ago, and we shared for 3 hours until 2 a.m. Pacific time. And I must give a special shout-out to James and Richard, two faithful regulars from our chat room, who stayed up and tuned in to the entire show. Thank you. If you missed the show, you can still get it by going to coasttocoast.com. J.D. wrote, well done on the Coast to Coast show. It is what the U.S. needs. Simple logic explained in parables, close quote. I'm not sure how to take that one. All right. Bill wrote, Dear Eldon, substance, substance, substance. That's what I heard last night. Glad I stayed up without caffeine even. Sharon wrote, listen to you on Coast to Coast. Fascinating show. I'm going to try to practice your teachings. Great show and great advice. Thanks. Bruce wrote, Eldon, I heard you on Coast to Coast last night. You are very inspiring. Mark wrote, I so enjoyed your talk on Coast to Coast AM radio show. Just the other night, I was having what you call inner talk with myself, and the question that kept coming up was, who are you? I believe that this is the center of all my desires. You helped me to understand this by listening to you on Coast to Coast. John wrote, I've really enjoyed the InnerTalk program regarding self-destructive patterns, and I'm now absorbing the self-confidence one. Thanks for putting out effective programs. Brian wrote, words cannot express how much your kindness and program have helped me. I am not even sure I could say I would be here today without your help. I am truly thankful and feel blessed to have found you. Thank you so very much. Well, Brian, thank you for your feedback, and we wish you all the very best. All right, that's all the time we're going to take for letters today. But I do invite you to opine by sending your email to eldon@eldontaylor.com or by joining me on Facebook. We can't get all of your letters on the air, but they do impact our programming. And once again, I both appreciate and thank you for your feedback and continued support. Now to today's show. Among Mediums, A Scientist's Quest for Answers with author Julie Bischel. Now, mediums seem to come in all varieties and obtain their information in diverse ways, but in common to each other, they are getting their insight from the other side. We have discussed mediums in the past and examined the records and history of ectoplasma, seances, Ouija boards, crystal balls, and some of the more modern methods and personalities such as James von Prague and John Edward. Mediums who speak to the dead in front of large audiences and even during live television broadcasts. Now, the doubters and naysayers believe that mediumship is one big hoax or fraud. Indeed, the Skeptic blog has several stories about specific mediums and lumps them all into entertainers, magicians of sorts, and fakers. There are some very bright minds who view mediums with disdain. For example, Michael Shermer says this, quote, "Death is a part of life, and pretending that the dead are gathering in a television studio in New York to talk twaddle with a former ballroom dance instructor is an insult to the intelligence and humanity of the living," close quote. Richard Hodson says this, quote, "Nearly all professional mediums are a gang of vulgar tricksters who are more or less in league with one another," close quote. Okay, now, the counterpoint often comes from mediums themselves. James von Prague, who's been on this show, answers this way, quote, "We, psychics, are here to heal people and to help people grow. Skeptics, they're just here to destroy people. They're not here to encourage people, to enlighten people. They're here to destroy people," close quote. And Alison Dubois has this to say, quote, "I've never heard of a skeptic helping anybody with their skepticism. To a large degree, they just want to shame somebody so they can feel greater than them. But they're not going to shame me. I'm very proud of what I do," close quote. Now, this is exactly the kind of dispute I love to see science get involved with. After all, this is a frontier open to the exploration and one in which a great deal of human currency exists. Enter a few brave scientists, and our guest today is a leader among them. Julie Bischel, PhD, author of Among Mediums, A Scientist's Quest for Answers, received her doctorate in pharmacology and toxicology from the University of Arizona in 2003. She is the co-founder and director of research at the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, a full member of the Parapsychological Association and the Society of Scientific Exploration, and serves on the scientific advisory boards of the Rhine Research Center and the Forever Family Foundation. Dr. Bischel is adjunct faculty in the Graduate College of Psychology and Humanistic Studies at Saybrook University and director of both the Spirits and Spirit Communication and the Survival and Life After Death Research Departments at the World Institute for Scientific Exploration. Dr. Bischel has been with us before and you loved her, so let's get her in here. Welcome back to Provocative Enlightenment, Dr. Julie Bischel.
Thanks so much for having me again, Eldon. It's great to be here.
Indeed, our pleasure. So let's to begin with, tell us a little bit about who you are, but specifically how you became interested in mediums and why you left your chosen fields of study, pharmacology and toxicology.
The short answer is a personal loss, which is how a lot of people get interested in this topic. And when I was in, I tell this story in detail in Among Mediums, but when I was in graduate school, my mother committed suicide. And I'd been raised in a very traditional, you know, scientific and religious, you know, Midwestern German heritage family, and I'd never heard of a medium. I didn't know what a medium was. And a couple years after my mom died, that was when John Edward, that Crossing Over show was really big on TV. And I saw that and I thought, those people look really moved by these specific things that he's saying. But, you know, TV, right? Anything can happen. So I'd need to see it for myself. And eventually I got a personal reading from a local medium. And it was very evidential. And I'd read a little bit about cold reading and, you know, the the practice that fraudulent mediums use to sort of read cues from the sitter in order to fabricate what seems to the sitter to be an accurate reading. And so I knew a little bit about that, and I knew that you should just say yes and no to the medium. And the medium provided enough information, enough specific things that I was quite convinced that there was something that science had yet to explain going on. And I looked into it, and, you know, though people had been researching medium since the 1880s, there wasn't, you know, very little modern controlled research was taking place. And so, you know, fast forward some years, and then I founded the Winbridge Institute with my husband and research partner, Mark Bacuzzi, and we sort of, you know, I have a very strong sense of justice, so I really felt like a scientist needed to stand up for these people who, you know, like those quotes you were saying, they're just trying to help people doing what they do and with a natural ability that they have, and here are these other people grouping them all together and saying they're all frauds, and I just wasn't fair, and I knew that they needed a scientist to really eliminate all these alternative explanations that these skeptics always throw at them and demonstrate if it could still take place, if they could still report accurate and specific information even under controlled conditions. And lo and behold, they can.
Now, Julie, I have to add, I mean, this is provocative enlightenment. I've got to ask you some tough questions, but you obviously have a bias, and the bias is based on your personal experience. One of the first requisites to good scientific work is setting aside your bias. How do you go about doing that?
Well, my husband and I just watched the movie Frankenweenie last night, and there's like the science teacher in the little kid's school that has this diatribe about what science is, and that you can never remove the scientist from the science. And I'm always saying that, and you know, even chemists, like, they don't recognize that they're part of their experiment. So obviously I need to recognize that. And you know, there's the good things about that, because as a scientist, recognize that you need to study mediumship as it exists in reality. You can't take a medium and put her in false situations that you think she should still be able to do what she can do, and then when she can't do it, call her a fraud. You have to, you know, so we always say ideal mediumship research requires environment that optimizes the process for everybody involved and maximum experimental controls. So unless you have those two things, you really haven't learned anything about mediumship. And then the other piece of it, and again, I talk a lot about this in Among Mediums, is that I didn't have a good relationship with my mother. And her death was, to put it bluntly, a relief. And so I didn't need for her to still be around. In fact, I was pretty happy she wasn't. So I do not have a need for survival of consciousness to be true, because the fact that she's gone is fine with me. And so I didn't have a bias where I need this to be true. And, you know, I don't have like my experience with that medium didn't bias me. That's data collection, right? The first step in the scientific method is make an observation. So that was
okay,
my observation.
Okay, but the psychologist in me, the scientist in me, says there was a reason you sought out a medium regarding your mother's death, be that unresolved conflict, be it guilt, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And that in and of itself can be a factor that leads to bias because of the results that you obtain from that medium, yay or nay?
Well, that was just the observation step, right? So then I go on to make the hypothesis. Mediums can report accurate and specific information about deceased people, and then I design an experiment. And my bias did not come into play when I designed the experiment, where all the alternative explanations for where she could, the sensory explanations for where she can be getting her information, that isn't bias. That is an objective determination
okay.
of
now,
what those
Skeptico has, they basically critiqued your research, and I'm sure you're familiar with their critiques. How do you respond to the charges that, you know, your sample sizes are not large enough, et cetera, and so forth?
So I like to say science is peer-reviewed, and a blog on the internet is not my peer. So these methods and these data have been peer-reviewed and published in peer-reviewed journals, and so experts have determined that that sample size is effective. I wrote a 30-some page paper about the specific methods that we use and how we control for the information that the names provide and everything. It's all in these peer-reviewed journals. So it is not my obligation to defend myself to a blog on the internet. That has already been defended to my peers through peer-reviewed journal publication.
That's an outstanding answer, of course.
Thank you.
You and Gary Schwartz have worked together a good deal. And he has, you know, tested different mediums. And you're familiar with how he has tested different mediums. And cold reading is one of the things that these mediums have been accused of being able to do during some of his experimentation. Have you considered alternatives? For example, the BBC aired a special investigation of mediums, and specifically they dealt with three prominent ones, only to come to the conclusion that the mediums, these three, were all phonies. Their expert, a Dr. Kieran O'Keefe, said that after 15 years of searching for a genuine medium, he had still not found one, but he was hopeful that one day he would. Now, what they did, and this is kind of down my alley, because this is the kind of thing I would have done as an investigator, is they made up a story about the founder of a chocolate factory. They posted the story on Facebook, and they put other such details out there on the web. The fictitious factory founder, one George Bull, who never existed, supposedly, according to the story, was aggressive and ruthless and impatient, and he drove his employees, and one day, due to his impatience, he dropped a box that made a loud noise, and that caused horses pulling a delivery wagon to bolt, and this led to the wagon cutting off his legs and killing him. As such, he sort of haunted the chocolate factory, or so the story went. So three mediums were called in to see if they would sort of cheat and repeat any of the fictitious story, and they all did. Your thoughts on findings of this nature, and have you ever considered this kind of investigation?
Well, you know, that's entrapment, right? And so,
well, it would be if it's a criminal offense, but it's certainly not if you're, you know, civilly investigating the veracity of someone who.
But you said it was on BBC. So those were mediums who wanted to be on TV. So that already, they're not representative of the general population of mediums. Those are people who wanted to get on TV.
But it hits the big ones, the Von Prags and the Edwards.
Oh. I'm not familiar with that. I've critiqued Kieran's published research, his journal research, for those same considerations that they put them, you know, one paper that he published with Richard Wiseman, they called the local spiritualist church, and they asked them, the spiritualist church has a list of mediums that they have certified in their own way, and they asked them for that list, and they called some of them up, and they brought them to the lab, and they had them do 5 readings in 5.5 hours in a room by themselves with a video camera. So that doesn't mimic how mediumship works. And then when it didn't work, then they were like, all mediums are, you know, frauds. And so in our research at the Wimbridge Institute, we work with on our research team is a group of Wimbridge certified research mediums, and it's currently 19 mediums who have we have put through a stringent 8-step screening testing and training procedure. So, and at the end of that, they become part of the research team. So they inform studies. You know, I can call them up and say, could you do this if we did this? And they would say, no, that's really not what we do. We don't go into cemeteries. We don't look at photographs, you know, all these sorts of things. Not that I ever suggested those things to them. And then we do controlled research. So they're research mediums. So they understand, part of their training is they learn about the history of mediumship research. And the way that we do our experiments is it's just me and the medium on the phone, and all we have is the first name of the deceased person. And then I ask the medium specific questions about that deceased person, and then the living person associated with that person scores that reading and a decoy reading without knowing which is which, and then we report the differences in accuracy ratings between the target reading and the decoy reading. So there's no way, the first time the medium hears the first name is at the start of the reading, and it totally eliminates any way that fraudulent behavior could take place, even if they wanted to, or if I wanted to, because of the levels of blinding, there's no sensory leakage of information. So you can look up Jack on the internet while you're on the phone with me all you want. It's not going to give you the right information about these specific questions I'm going to ask you about how Jack died and what were Jack's hobbies and what did Jack look like and what was his personality like and what are his messages for his sitter. Our protocol eliminates that fraud.
Now, you get
that
scores
possibility of fraud.
You get scores and subscores, though, doing it that way, don't you, Julie? I mean, indeed, there would be the general, and then there would be the specific. Because when you ask very specific questions, is there a difference between the two levels of score, or do you generally have the same kind of accuracy, whether it's a very specific issue or it's a, you know, a general question?
Well, we only ask specific questions. So there is no general. At the very end, in some experiments, we say, is there anything else? Is there anything else you could tell me about the person? And that's about as general as it gets. But they've already answered all the specific questions about physical description, personality, interest, and cause of death. And I have looked at the differences between the specific questions. And off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you exactly what they were, but there were some differences where some of those questions are answered more accurately. I think cause of death probably was more accurate than the other ones.
Okay. Your info states, and I quote, that your research interests include examinations of the accuracy and specificity of the information mediums report, as well as their experience, psychology, and physiology, and the potential social applications of mediumship readings, especially as a potential therapeutic option for bereaved. Now, that seems like a really tall order, so let's take it apart little by little, if we may.
Okay.
First,
actually, before we do that, I just want to say one more thing about blinding. So, yeah, if you ever have a sitter in the room with the medium, that's not blinded, right? Because if the sitter gasps or, you know, coughs, or anything that the medium can hear, that provides loads of information. Even her perfume, you know, now you know it's a woman. Or if they're smoking, like if they smell like smoke, now you know they're a smoker and things like that. So even like, you know, even if you visually blind the medium to the sitter, there is still loads of information that get through. So we never have the medium and the sitter in the same place. Like I said, we do these phone readings. The sitter's nowhere to be found. The sitter doesn't hear the reading as it takes place, and it's just me and the medium. So, yeah, I wanted to make that clear, because a lot of these public and media demonstrations, the medium is only visually blinded to the sitter, and that's not appropriate for scientific testing.
All right. But
okay,
let's
move on to that.
That's okay. No, I like where you are. Let's just stay there for a second, because we've got a break coming up in just a few seconds. Anyway, you do decoy readings, you indicated, when you do this. Is that another form of entrapment? Just a quickie, because we only have about 20 seconds.
The sitter scores their own reading and a reading that was intended for a different sitter. So it's just to control for rater bias.
All right. So you don't make up a name and say, I have Thomas here and see what they say.
No, we never give the medium.
All right. We're speaking with Dr. Julie Beischel about her book, Among Mediums, A Scientist's Quest for Answers. If you're not already in our chat room, now is a great time to join in the conversation. We have a short movie for you during the break, so be sure to log in to eldentaylor.com/chat. Do stay tuned. You don't want to miss what's coming up after a few words from some of our friends.
Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
And welcome back. If you just joined us, we're speaking with Dr. Julie Beischel about her book, Among Mediums, A Scientist's Quest for Answers. But before we get back to the show, I want to invite you to join me on Facebook as a friend or a fan. I post regularly everything from where I am and what's on next to the latest in science, technology, and consciousness studies. And from time to time, some of my own opinions about the world we live in. I also want to remind you to be sure and register to receive my free newsletter when you visit my site and get your free MP3. All right, let's get back to the show. Dr. Beischel, before the break, I was asking you a long question, and we have a really interesting question from a caller. I want to get to that, but for the sake of continuity, let's go back to this subdivided nature from your statement, and I'm going to ask you about the physiology of a medium. Now, I'm aware that, say, with Jay-Z Knight, there's been research where when she receives Rompta, when he comes in, some solid scientists have measured changes in electromagnetic field and changes in her own physiology, heart rate, breathing, etc. How do you measure the physiology? What do you mean by that?
So for the last 2 years, we collected data in a project where we worked the researchers from the Winbridge Institute and mediums from the Winbridge Institute worked with researchers at the Institute of Noetic Sciences, and we collected EEG and physiology data from mediums while they did readings under these blinded conditions. And then we looked at the correlation between what was happening in their brains and in their bodies to accuracy. So we scored each question was scored for accuracy, and then we looked at the EEG while the medium was responding.
Let me make sure I understand this. You're saying that you're measuring their physiology and correlating that with the accuracy of their reading? So like a lie detector?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
And it's difficult. We're looking specifically at the EEG, at the electrical activity in the brain, and then correlating that to the scores that the absence sitter gave the medium's responses to specific questions. And it gets complicated because you have the EEG electrodes on your head, you can't talk because the electricity of your muscles moving your jaw will interfere with the electrodes. So we had to ask the medium the question, and then she had to think of the answer, get the answer, while she was silent and didn't move. And then we would say, okay, we had to wait 20 seconds, and we had to wait, and then she would say the thing. So it was a very stressful situation, and it didn't mimic. It was the furthest from the natural mediumship environment that I'd ever any experiment I'd ever done. That was the furthest that there was. And those results aren't published yet, so I can't really discuss what we found. But we have completed that study.
If you need a polygraph or a psychological stress evaluator, I still have that equipment.
Oh, fantastic, because the next thing we are, these 2 years, we're doing a study, hematology and psychophysiology study, so we're going to take their blood before mm-hmm. and after and see if, things like cortisol, stress hormones increase, and that, because from anecdotally, again, I talk a little bit about this, there's a section in Among Mediums where I talk about physiology, and from the anecdotal data I've collected, mediums tend to have a greater risk of health problems than other people, and so we'd like to look at maybe getting to the bottom of why that's happening. A lot of autoimmune disorders, so this study, it takes place this year and next year, and then publication always takes longer than that. We'll be collecting data. But I'll stay in touch with you because, some additional equipment would really be helpful.
But be sure and let me know. I'd love to see what you've done, too, with this as soon as it's available. Now, you suggest that a common denominator among the mediums may be, problems with immune system. So are there any other common denominators that you've seen among mediums?
I only have access to these 19. So all I can, like I said, in among mediums, I discussed like their, how often different diseases existed in them compared to the national, like migraines. And I think the autoimmune disorder is really interesting because, all day long they're taking on other people, right? The body's immune system job is to recognize self and other. And they're taking in all these other, right? A lot of times during mediumship reading, the medium will actually feel pain in the part of the body that was related to the cause of death or, and they're smelling things and they're seeing things and hearing things. So there's a lot of other sort of in their body. So the fact that the immune system might get confused as to what is self and what is other and resulting in an autoimmune disease, that seems, metaphysically possible to me. That seems like that might be, that's understandable why mediums might have a higher risk for autoimmune disorders. That's just me speculating. It's the first study, so it's sort of a shotgun approach, right? So we take blood and we look at a bunch of things, and then it will provide direction for future studies. Okay, we saw a change in this, like, let's really look at that now. So it's just the first piece.
That's very interesting. I hope it holds up with more veracity than some studies I've seen, such as... Well, maybe I shouldn't say that. Get myself in trouble. Let's do this. We have a very interesting question from a caller who's been hanging on now for about 25, 26 minutes to talk to you, and it's right where I'm going. And so let's take that phone call, and then we'll come back. Teresa from Sausalito, California, welcome to Provocative Enlightenment. You have a question for Dr. Bishol, please.
Yes, I do. This is an amazing show. This is absolutely amazing. I actually am a medium, and I can't even believe the circumstances that I even caught this show. I'd like to make a comment first, and that is, as a medium, when they tested the three mediums on the false story about the chocolate factory,
yes,
anyone who's a medium would know why they tapped into that. And the perception is that it was a false story, but any medium would know that the story was now in existence.
Oh, I think that may be possible, but if you actually see the YouTube, Teresa, and it is up, anyone can Google it and get it. In fact, it's posted on the Provocative Enlightenment page for this radio show on Facebook. You'll see that, we've got some acting going on here. What your explanation where that may be a possibility, I cannot believe that it actually applies to these three.
Well, maybe not in that incident, but certainly if a story is created or something is on an energetic level, you can pick up on it. You can pick up patterns or somebody's intentions, even though they're not on the physical plane. So,
right, your question for Dr. Bishol.
So my question was this. One of the things that I rarely, if ever, hear is that when somebody begins to hear voices or they begin to hear or have, for me it was voices and a knowingness, no one's more shocked than the medium themselves because you're not identified as yourself as a medium at that point. It's a surprise to you as much as anybody else when things start coming out of your mouth that are accurate. And you don't hear a lot about it, but the idea that you were just speaking about mediums absorbing, energetically absorbing someone's illness or why somebody died or what, and feeling it in your body is really accurate. It gets into a vibrational match. you're tapping into that vibration and you're vibrationally matching it. And if you don't know how to clear it, you tend to be a sponge for it. So almost all psychics and mediums that I know that are really practicing spend a great deal of time trying to clear that. But I was wondering, in your research, have you found that most mediums were pretty surprised by it themselves?
We haven't looked at that specifically. It's odd that you ask or not, right? Because I, like in my intro, Eldon said, I am on the faculty at Saybrook University, and I'm on the committee of a student who's, that's his dissertation project that he's looking at, is interviewing mediums about that first experience, which may or may not have been traumatic, that first recognition of, you know, something's different. I'm getting this information that, you know, nobody else seems to be getting, and that sort of thing. So we haven't looked at that. He's looking at it. I'm working with him on that. So we'll, you know, once he does that research, we'll have to get back to you on that.
Yeah, it's almost as if, you know, I think the thing that I'm, and I'm a scientist also. So, you know, I looked at a lot of the scientific information. I was very much part of the scientific world. And when this begins to happen, I think it takes a little while before it clicks, like this is what's happening. You know, things just start coming to you, and you say something, or you know who's on the phone, or you know something's going on. And it takes a little while before you really kind of click multiple experiences before you start saying, you know, there's some accuracy here.
And interesting. Thank you for your call, Teresa.
Thank you so much. I love the show. It's wonderful.
Well, thank you.
All right. Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
All right,
you
bye
too.
Bye.
Dr. Beischel, the notion that a first experience, that's very intriguing. It would occur to me that maybe potential mediums have that experience and they're fearful of it because of their background. They repress it. Maybe they even think that they're becoming schizophrenic, hearing voices. Do you have a kind of an overall, because of your experience, take, despite the fact I know there's not been research on this?
Yeah, we haven't looked at it specifically, but part of our 8-step screening process, like step one is the mediums just fill out a questionnaire about their history and, you know, family history, educational history. And, you know, I've talked to them, obviously I talked to them. And so my sort of the general like stereotypical experience is that the mediums sort of had, they can remember the first time, like I saw my grandfather at the foot of my bed. I knew my aunt was going to die, you know, things like that. And Maybe their family was like, oh, you know, what a weird coincidence, or you have such an imagination, and then they sort of repress it. And usually what happens is when they get to be, like, teenagers and a little bit before, they recognize that overall, that overwhelming need to be normal. And so they really shut it down at that point because they don't want to be different. And then usually in their 20s or, you know, later, something will happen that sort of brings it back to the surface, and then at that point they're mature enough that they're able to embrace it, and then they facilitate it through the rest of their life. That seems to be the stereotypical story. And I think that this physiology study will serve another purpose, where it brings into the base of knowledge that this is a physiological process, so which means it's normal. It's something that the body does, which will sort of bring it out of this realm of like delusion and hallucination and that sort of thing, that this is something real and we need to understand it. And, you know, I've been hearing horror stories about young children being diagnosed with schizophrenia, which doesn't present, you know, normally until if you're in your late 20s,
that's right.
When schizophrenia rears its head in people. And young children are being diagnosed because the mainstream community doesn't know what to do with little kids who say that they're hearing voices. And if we can normalize this, like, no, this happens, this is the natural process, then it will limit, if not eliminate, the over-medication and misdiagnosis of people as having pathologies that really are not, it's not paranormal. It's not, you know, it's just something that, it's just a perception that some people are better at than other people, but they need a support system.
I don't know that the physiological evidence that you will derive can be driven that far, because you can take someone that believes they're Napoleon Bonaparte and they're going to have physiological responses. The nature of our body is that it's going to respond to the thoughts that are in our mind, whether they're genuine or they're not.
Right, like hysterical pregnancy?
Well, yes.
Where the body, yeah. No, that I get. But to show that there's a physical reality to what's happening may get us closer to this.
I like that idea.
Misdiagnosing people with schizophrenia.
The potential for social applications of mediumship is something you spend a good deal of time on in your book, and you're addressing one such thing. But the one that caught my interest was the therapeutic option for the bereaved. Flesh that out for us.
Okay. So anecdotally, and in a pilot study that we did, people report. And, like, if you've ever seen, John Edward on TV, like, those people look very moved. And we've heard people report, drastic life changes after receiving mediumship readings, where they just had unbearable grief that sort of overnight, within the hour of the mediumship reading, changes, like, night and day. And psychology, in grief specifically, it's been called in the literature folk remedies. So when the mainstream mental health and medical community don't have anything to offer people, or the people aren't getting what they need, they will go out into the world and find what they need, and then so they call those folk remedies. And I think that at this point, I think that's where mediumship is. People aren't having the recovery from grief that they want from the mainstream community, so they're getting readings. They are taking it upon themselves to treat their grief, and they're getting readings. And science hasn't looked at that. We don't know if it helps people, which kinds of people it may help. How long after the death should you get a reading? Are certain personality types, more apt to feel better after a mediumship reading, and all these sorts of things. So I designed, with my background in pharmacology, I designed a randomized clinical trial, and it's called the Bereavement and Mediumship, or BAM, study. And people can learn more about the BAM study at afterlifescience.com. But it's the first step in demonstrating whether or not there even is an effect under these, under a randomized clinical trial. Is there an effect on grief after a mediumship reading? So we'll look at that, and it's, like I said, it's like the physiology study, it's the first step, because that has to be done before we can ask those other questions about who benefits and when, and that sort of thing. And ideally, we see a future in which the counselor community and the mediumship community can work together. And counselors can recognize, that data will have been collected where a counselor can recognize this person is exhibiting these signs and has this personality type and is at this point in their grief. Maybe it's time that they get a reading. And a number of our mediums get referrals from mental health professionals in their community. So it's, sure, like I said, it's a folk remedy. It's already happening. People are already, quote unquote, taking this drug. And now we just want to study its effects.
I think you could speak to any pastoral counselor. I've done my fair share of that. And they would tell you that there is no solution for the loss of a loved one short of reaching to the other side. If you have that strict Darwinian view that we are just a process of evolution, and that's it. When it's all over with, the meat machine is gone, dissolved, becomes dust. There isn't a lot of hope at helping people in their bereavement. So that's commendable. All right, let me ask you this. whenever we watch television, whenever we see a movie, whenever there's a medium in it, you know, there can be the fakers, there can be, but we often also have the not so nice spirit coming through. I don't want to say they're evil. We'll just say they're confused. In your experience, your research, what kind of spirits do you get through? Do you get the bad ones?
Well, in our research, we're asking for specific people, right? So we've screened, we have this pool of volunteers.
Well, okay, let me say that differently. Not in your research, because, okay, but working with the mediums that you've worked with, certainly you've had conversations where they've told you about, you know, spirits or entities that that seemed angry or hostile or evil.
I'm a scientist, right? So the only thing that I can be sure of are data I collected.
Okay,
so
but let's take the one.
I those stories, but I can't comment on that.
Oh, you can too now. Listen, you've got 18 you've certified. Did I have that right?
19, yes.
19, okay. And you had conversations with them, have you not?
I have.
Okay, now come on, give us the story. You know, we're not asking you now as the scientist. You've qualified that very well. You've not run a study, but what have they told you?
I honestly don't feel comfortable conveying their stories, but I'll tell you this. In among mediums, the criticism I got was, oh, I wanted to hear stories about what mediums say. Like, I'm not a medium, so I can't share those stories. But we are working on a series of books called From the Mouths of Mediums, where I interview the mediums on different topics, and then we'll release, you know, a topic about, you know, what you said, confused spirits. And we'll release one about children, you know, who have died, and suicides, and what does it feel like in your body to be a medium, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, any question you could think of. And so I will leave it up to them to tell you that.
And you'll come back and you'll discuss it with us when you have these other books
there
and online, right?
I'll do that.
Okay. All right. Bottom line question. You're the scientist, your personal view, your scientific view. Is there life after death, and are these mediums actually talking to deceased people?
The collection of data, I think, does support that the consciousness continues to exist after the physical death of the body, and that the mediums are communicating with those consciousnesses. I think we just, in next month, I'll be, in just a couple weeks, actually, I'll be presenting some new data at the meeting of the Society for Scientific Exploration, where we did a study where some of the names we gave the mediums were living people and some were dead people. And then they did a reading and then they filled out a standardized questionnaire about their experience, their state of consciousness during that reading. And we found under those blinded conditions, there were differences in their experience when they read for a dead person versus when they read for a living person. And in like 73% of the time, they spontaneously reported whether or not that person was living or dead. So this alternative parapsychological explanation for where a medium gets her information, oh, they're just reading the mind of the sitter, they're just using clairvoyance or precognition, this study demonstrates that they know what clairvoyance and telepathy and precognition feel like, and mediumship feels different under blinded conditions.
We're out of time, Dr. Beischel, and I do want you to get in how our audience can contact you, learn more about you, for that matter, can participate, assist in funding some of your research. So please give us all that contact detail in about 20 seconds.
Windbridge.org is our main website, and you can join our email list. Afterlifescience.com has where you can contribute to the BAM study, the Bereavement and Mediumship study. We're really looking for support for that. And then amongmediums.com has information about the book.
All right. Do check it all out. And the book is a great book. I have it on my Kindle. It's a super read. Well, we've come to the end of another hour of Provocative Enlightenment. I want to thank the team at Hay House Radio for making what we do on this show so easy and pleasurable. And, of course, a big thank you to our guest and to all of you for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed our show and will join us again next week, same time and same place. And if you have comments on our show, do let us know. Okay, until next time, wherever you are in the world, remember, believing in yourself always matters.